Time to take a look at science. Science research, science education with Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA and Director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. I'm Larry Mueller. Pleased to welcome Bassam back, and certainly if you have some questions as we move along today about science education or science research, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Bassam, welcome back. You've just, this is a big anniversary for you. This is today, isn't it? The 52nd anniversary of your coming to the U.S.?
Yes, it is. It's a special day for me. It's full of nostalgia. It's, it is very gratifying for me to be a citizen of the United States. I love America. I love my native country, too. But yes, 52 years ago, my parents and two younger sisters and I landed in New York City on our way to Boston, where my father was coming to Harvard as a visiting professor. And we were to be here for just 1 year, Larry. and so here I am. Both of my parents are deceased. My two younger sisters, one lives on the West Coast, one lives on the East Coast with their families. Mm-hmm. I live with Madison, mm-hmm. with my family, really happy, excited, and grateful for the wonderful hospitality and the great opportunities that have been made available to me. I tell you, I every time, I've said this to you on the air before, every time I go overseas and I come back, I go down on my knees and give thanks for being in the United States. It's a great country. It's a great society. It's not perfect, mm-hmm. But we enjoy democracy. We enjoy a good standard of living. We have a nurturing environment that promotes learning. I can't tell you how much I've learned in the past 52 years here. It's such a joy, and being at UW Madison is very exciting. It's really a citadel for learning. It is well respected all over the world, mm-hmm. and but it's also respected within the state of Wisconsin and the neighboring mm-hmm. states. So it's just great. And thank you for remembering that this is my anniversary.
And I'm told that you even had celebrated with your students yesterday with a cake, which would have had to have been a pretty big cake because you tend to have large classes.
Yes, I have about 360 students in my class plus graduate teaching assistants. And so we had a big sheet with nicely decorated, marked appropriately, uh-huh. and got a big round of applause from the students. And I've been getting email messages from them, too. Some of them saw me on the street yesterday and congratulated me, but they enjoyed the cake. Yes, that was a special treat I wanted to give them.
Well, you know, this is a new academic year. We're 3 or so weeks into the semester. I'm teaching my classes. Actually, it's your 40th year as a faculty member as well. What advice have you been giving to students as they move along here with their education and maybe with their parents?
Yes, it is the third week of classes. In fact, I'm giving my first exam tomorrow.
Ooh.
Yes, I'm giving 5 exams this semester instead of 3 exams mm-hmm. in an attempt to help students focus on their academic work. I'm interested in the full development of the individual. And in my chemistry class, of course, we learn a lot of chemistry. But I also try to engage the students in activities that helps them learn better, helps them develop good study skills, helps them transition from high school. Most of the students in my class, about 80% of them are freshmen,
yeah.
transition from high school to college. And so I share with them actually a whole series of suggestions and hints for focusing on what we do, and I publish this. It's called my course guide and syllabus. It's about 15 pages long. Mm-hmm. It's posted on my website. Anyone in the listening audience can
take a look at it.
And among other things that I try to do, I suggest to them how to prepare for each class, for each chemistry class, whether it's a lecture, a discussion section, or a laboratory. I also ask them to group themselves in groups of 4 to 5 a group called Cooperative Learning Group. They may sit together in the lecture hall if they want to, but for sure they should study together outside of class. And I say to every student in my class, for every hour we see you during the week in chemistry, you should be devoting 2 hours of studying outside class. And it's easy to do the arithmetic, and they do it. And then something very, very important that I say to them, two things actually, more important. I say for every hour of studying that you do weekly on average, on 45 minutes should be by yourself and 15 minutes with someone else. So where you compare notes, work with your cooperative learning group, and so on. And every weekend, take about an hour or so to reflect on what you have learned during that week. In fact, I suggest to them to write down their reflections. And I invited them to share their reflections with me. And I'm happy to tell you that more than half the class last week responded to my invitation to share these reflections. I haven't read them all yet, but they are.
You have a lot to read.
There's a lot to read.
I 180 said, or so.
I said, well, it's over 200 that responded. I said, just, you know, do it for about a page or so. The idea is for them to take time out and to think and to reflect so that they are ready to act. And so I'm really interested in their learning chemistry. I'm interested in their development as individuals. I'm interested in their taking responsibility for their learning.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that I say to my class. And as I say, anyone in the audience can go to my website, which is scifun.org, scifun.org, and look at my course guide. That all this information is in there.
Larry, go ahead.
A comment to the parents. Across time, I cannot help but say that students sometimes share with me that their parents are exerting undue pressure on them. This undue pressure is solely focused on grades. The students come in frequently and say, well, I'm getting a B in this course, I'm getting an AB in this course, and I have great parental pressure saying that I should be getting an A. And of course, as a parent, I understand the feelings that we want for our, and the wishes we want for our children to excel academically. But excellence is not measured only by grades. A grade is a momentary telltale. It becomes actually part of your permanent record at the end of the semester. But as one is moving along in the educational process, one should learn from the experience, and one should recognize that grades are not everything. They are something. They are important. So my request of the parents is to be comprehensive in the expectations that you have of your children, and not berate them, and I use that word deliberately, not berate them if they don't get an A in every course that they take. This is true not only in my course. This is, you know, throughout society. There's too much emphasis on grades, as if the grade is the purpose of the course. The purpose of the course is to expand minds and to learn how to learn and to enjoy life. That's the purpose of my course, to learn about chemicals, their role in our society, their safe handling, their properties. There's a lot of technical stuff that we do in my course, highly technical stuff. But grades are only one telltale of the person's development. And so my plea to the parents is be a good parent and and make sure that your children have good expectations and just be compassionate and be promoting their learning.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest, give us a call with your questions or comments as we talk science education and science research with him. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. You know, talking about teaching, the need for teachers across the country is rising. And I know some school districts are hiring teachers from other overseas. Baltimore hired 108 teachers from the Philippines in 2005. And 4 years later, they have more than 600 Filipino teachers working in classrooms. And why is this happening?
Well, for one thing, America is the land of opportunity.
Sure.
And people are welcome to come here. What is striking to me about that is the tremendous increase in the reliance on teachers coming from overseas. And that is a telltale that our own native-born students are not going into teaching. We need good teachers. You know, the country has over 3 million teachers, and the profile is such that we need to replace teachers quickly because of retirement, and teachers go into other careers sometimes. So there's a dire need to guide people to go into teaching. In my case, I emphasize teaching science, teaching of mathematics at all levels, at the elementary level, at the secondary level, at the collegiate level. We need good quality teachers who are committed to the subject matters that they teach and to the profession of teaching. I made a suggestion in an article I wrote last spring for the Wisconsin Academy magazine, trying to help us focus on the dire need of good teachers in the Milwaukee public school system. My suggestion is to provide opportunities to recruit and retain 200 teachers over a 10-year period. Every year, institutions of higher education in Wisconsin are to produce 200 teachers that would go into the Milwaukee public school system. Of course, MPS would have to be part of this.
Sure.
And these students would be given scholarships, and they would have an obligation to stay with the teaching profession in Milwaukee for 5 years. And so this is a challenge, not only to the Milwaukee public system that would have to become more hospitable to excellent teachers, but also for us in the state, to the business community, to the leaders of all parts of our community, not only institutions of higher education, but everyone who cares about the quality of education in inner city school systems such as Milwaukee. Now, I'm not saying there is no need in a rural area. But I'm saying we go about this in a targeted way. And I think Milwaukee can perhaps learn from the experience that Baltimore is going through. Other cities have done this before, recruiting teachers from overseas. It is actually enriching to have someone come from overseas, but we must develop a good cadre of teachers from within our society to help retain and sustain and promote the values of our society, and I feel that this is something that the state of Wisconsin can truly address from the governor down.
I'm Larry Mueller with Bassam Shakashiri as we talk science and science education and research. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll take some calls now as we talk science, research, and education with Bassam Shakashiri. Again, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Mary in Madison first. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a son that's attending the university there, and, you know, I guess I was wondering, I love the philosophy that Dr. Shakashiri was sharing, and I was kind of curious as to what kind of training the teaching assistants receive in order to assist the students learning the different types of, you know, subjects. Because I've gotten really frustrated, and I don't know how to advise my son. He is in a class that students are totally called out by the TA and said, if this were the real world, you would be fired. And when they ask for explanations, he just seems to say the same thing he said, not in a different manner. And, you know, we're paying good money for this education.
Yeah. All right.
Mary, you raise a very good question about an area that I and others at UW-Madison and elsewhere care a great deal about, and that is the quality of undergraduate education. I'll use my class as an example. I have 360 students in my class, mostly freshmen, but I also have 8 graduate students who are teaching assistants. They help instruct discussion sections in smaller groups, 22 at a time, and laboratory as well. I meet with my teaching assistants on a weekly basis to discuss what is coming up in the course, to discuss how they should be developing the quizzes that they write, how they should be emphasizing certain items that I may have mentioned in lecture or is in the textbook. So we meet with the lab director as well to talk about laboratory instruction. So that's one aspect of the training that you asked about, Mary, that we go through. Another aspect is before the semester began, all the incoming graduate students participated in a week-long orientation and training program. It was highly intensive. It was more than 8 hours a day, not only telling them about what the offerings are of the university chemistry department that they will be participating in, but we had mock-up sessions on how to conduct a discussion section and what happens in the lab. They actually tried some of the experiments and so on. So we pay attention to this area where we are dependent on graduate students to assist in our teaching. I think it's a great system because the teaching assistants are not much older than the students. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that long ago that they were taking this course. They know the technical material very well. Otherwise, they would not be in graduate school at UW-Madison. What we try to work on, and what I think is very important, is the way in which they interact with the students, mm-hmm. to develop more understanding and more patience, recognizing that most of the students in my course, again, I'm using my course as the example, are not going to be chemistry majors. Many of them are not going to be even science majors. So dealing with their learning and helping them develop individual learning styles, we all have different styles of learning, is part of what we try to emphasize and try to work on. Do we succeed, Mary? We try. I cannot tell you it's 100% successful. But I welcome your comments. I welcome the comments from other parents, from my colleagues in the teaching profession, from former students. We benefit from those comments and try to individualize the instruction as much as possible. Having said all that, it is really up to the student to take full advantage of the rich offerings that we have here. It's not just the teaching assistant. It's not just the professor. We have great resources here. And the individual student, as part of their transition to collegiate life, they should take responsibility, learn to take responsibility for their learning by seeking advice and counsel from the faculty and from the academic staff and from the graduate teaching assistants. So you raise a very good point, Mary, and I thank you for it, and I hope my answer addresses the issues that you raised.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Bill in Shiocton, we turn to you next. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Morning.
Love the show when you have Dr. Sam on.
Thank you.
I have a question about, somewhere around 2004, I heard a report on NPR News that a lot of scientific organizations were reluctant to hold conferences in the U.S. because of the difficulty of getting visas for foreign scientists. And I'm wondering if Dr. Sam could comment on what the situation is now.
That's a very good question that you raise, Bill. Yes, many organizations, ones I belong to, the American Chemical Society, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, are very concerned about having scientists from overseas come to our national meetings. We have an Office of International Activities at the American Chemical Society. There's a similar one at the American Association for the Advancement of Science that focuses on contacting the State Department and talking to the right people at the State Department to assure scientific freedom and to assure the ability of scientists from different countries who are not given visas to attend those meetings. I would say this is a situation that we always have to pay attention to. It's not going to go away. There are scientists from third world countries. Mm-hmm. There are scientists from the former Soviet Union. There are scientists from all over the world who sometimes are denied a visa to come to an open scientific meeting. And this is contrary to what our country is all about and the values that we have here. And I would say, having participated in some of these contacts with our State Department, that we have been successful. It takes a lot of effort just to get these visas approved in time for two or three scientists. But this is part of the openness that we have in our society and part of the way in which science makes progress around the world.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. That extends to some extent to our students from other countries as well.
Yes.
And getting those visas. Deb in Washington Island, hi to you.
Hey. I'm a 1974 graduate of the nursing school at the University of Wisconsin. I'm kind of wishing that this professor had been there at the time. chemistry was not one of my strong points. However, one of the reasons I'm calling today is that I have gone on to get advanced degrees and am board certified as a nurse midwife, and have worked in five education institutions, was a TA myself. I am very excited about learning science, and one of the things that's happening in the United States with people who are scientists going into healthcare, I know this intimately in the nursing profession, is when people reach the top of their pay scale in the hospitals, excuse me, they are gotten rid of, and recent times the hospitals headed by accounting people, not medical people, have been going to the Philippines and Thailand to hire nurses, which me is a double sin. Not only do we not keep our own people gainfully employed and learning more science and going further in their profession, but we're injuring those countries by taking less nurses from them.
Hmm. Comment, Bassam.
Yes. Well, there is a lot of complexity in the way we run our societal institutions. Some of the complexity is because of economic reasons. Some of it's because of insufficient education and lack of a healthy attitude. And so I would say that I want to keep the doors open for legal immigration. Mm-hmm. I want to make that very clear, not illegal immigration, mm-hmm. for legal immigration. I want to keep the door open because that enriches us. And I want to make opportunities available for our own students trained here who become professionals to excel in whatever endeavor they choose to do. So if one majors in chemistry, becomes a chemist, but they do something else, that's fine. If one is trained as a nurse and they practice nursing for some time, they move to something else, that's fine. I just think that it is important for us to be open, mm-hmm. hospitable, and to serve ourselves well, not at the expense of other cultures or other societies. Deb, there are many, many students who go into careers in nursing and then they practice overseas. And that's good, because this is how we share the knowledge that we have here. So that's my comment, Deb.
CERN is that because of the economics of healthcare, those nurses can be hired cheaper. Right. And our folks are losing their professional place. And my concern is that we have quality health care all the way around. I'm a supporter of immigration. I'm sorry if I gave you that impression. I'm just concerned that some of the science and some of our schooling is determined by the economic ability of the student.
I agree, and you did not give me the impression that you're not. No, no. I just wanted to say that clearly, so that what else I was saying would not be misunderstood.
Mm, yeah. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Deb. You can join in too as we visit with Bassam Shakashiri as we talk science, research, and education. We've been zeroing more on education today, but science research certainly on our minds as well. 1-800-642-1234. The number to call, or email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Dick in Montford. Dick, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to ask the professor if they, in their training sessions, if they practice paraphrasing, because this sounds like a major part of the problem. You get a lot of graduate assistants for whom English is a second language, and it depends on their fluency. What which this one woman described a few times back was exactly that problem. It's what you run into with a speaker of English who is not as well acquainted with it as would be. I was very fortunate. I was a chemistry major under old Prof. Sorum, and all of our graduate assistants seemed to be native speakers of English. So we didn't have that problem, but it has grown tremendously. As a retired university professor myself, I've heard that problem from students time and again, that they have problems, very often even understanding the graduate assistant. And it's not clear to me that there's any real training or filtering that's taking place to make sure that they have properly fluent graduate assistants.
You make a good observation, Dick, and the profile of the graduate students who are teaching assistants has changed dramatically. There just aren't as many native-born students going to graduate school, Dick, you know that, and that's a different topic that we can discuss and talk about. But yes, indeed, there are screening processes that all students who are admitted to graduate school at UW-Madison who are going to be TAs, and the screening includes looking at their fluency in English, recognizing they're going to be teaching courses in the English language. And I can tell you from experience that the TAs that I have from overseas know the subject matter very well and are willing to listen to advice and to respond to their students, speak more slowly, try to be sure that the technical words are not getting slurred or mixed up, having them write comments back on the lab reports or on a discussion, encouraging the student to go visit the TA in office during office hours, or come visit me during office hours. We pay attention to this situation, and I would say by and large we are successful. There are occasions, and I speak from experience, where a TA's fluency is not as good as it should be, even though this a person had gone through the screening process, and we've made changes in assignment in those situations. And it's one situation I'm thinking about here. So the system allows for taking advantage of the talents of graduate students from overseas to serve as TAs, and individual students again have to be taking responsibility for their learning and telling the TA, I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand what you said, or sharing with the professor in charge of the course the concerns that they have about this. It's an open system. We live in an open society. Just take responsibility for what you want to do and do it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Dick, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. With the, I don't know how many teaching assistants, for example, we might have here at Wisconsin, but the number of a very large number of teaching assistants, and I think for the most part, doing a pretty good job.
I'd say, an excellent job.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick in Wausau, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Nick.
Hello. Greetings to Dr. Shakashiri as well. I was actually in one of your courses about 6 years ago, and I was just listening in on the last call, and I hate to sort of repeat the idea about fluency of graduate teaching assistants, but it seemed like I was a nuclear engineering major, and it seems like through my academic career, it was probably about 90% of the teaching assistants that were foreign. And so, you know, probably about half the time it was okay, and then the other half of the time I really had trouble understanding and went to professors with concerns, and I just felt like it was a real hindrance to my academic process because I spend most of my time teaching myself, even though I was paying, you know, decent money for tuition. And I just really wasn't expecting that. Now, myself, I really wanted to go on to graduate school and, you know, perhaps be a TA. But it seemed like it was so competitive that a person with, you know, with, I think I had a 3.1 grade point average, I didn't stand a chance at, you know, getting into certain programs. So it seems like there's some real hindrances to, you know, either Wisconsin natives or Americans in general getting into graduate school, at least at UW, that would love to teach, you know, and continue. I just stopped my education and figured, well, I need to go get a job and make money, and that was it. So I never bothered to return, but I would have liked to. So,
well, Nick, I'm always, always happy to hear from former students, no matter what they're going to say. and you haven't said anything negative anyway, but yes, I mean, the look at the population of our graduate students across all disciplines, there's been a tremendous increase in the number of foreign students. That's a good thing, because science knows no international boundaries. On the other hand, we have to be more vigilant in paying more attention to the quality of undergraduate instruction, which is what the callers are really talking about here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we have to be careful in how the teaching assistants are assigned, how they are trained, how they can participate in English as a second language program, so that their pronunciation is improved, so that their diction is good, so that they can be heard in the classroom. All kinds of things like that, yes, require attention. And I you know, I'm glad, Nick, that you took responsibility for your own learning, as that's what we all should do. I would say, again, the graduate teaching assistants are assistants. They're not the teacher. Mm-hmm. They're not the teacher. And they are a good resource. For the most part, they do an excellent job. But the individual student, the undergraduate student, should seek vigorously all sources of help in order to improve their own learning.
Thanks very much for calling, Nick. Appreciate your call. I wanted to mention, Bassam, that there's an educational and a kind of a fun educational experience coming up this Saturday, and I wanted to point that out because it's the your chemistry department, UW Chemistry Department, has some hands-on activities and experiments for children between the ages of 6 and 10.
We do a program. This is under the auspices of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. We have a group of undergraduate students, speaking of undergraduates, who are trained, and by the way, some of them are foreign students, who are trained to put on presentations in a variety of settings. And every third Saturday in Madison at Villager Mall, at 10 o'clock in the morning, we have exploration stations where youngsters along with an adult can come and participate in doing experiments, hands-on experiments, hands-on, minds-on experiment. And the first one for this semester is on Saturday, the 19th of September at 10 a.m. at Villager Mall, which is on Park Street near the Beltline.
And a fun experience. And if you miss the first one, it's not like you can't come to the next one.
It's every third Saturday, except in December.
In December.
Right.
And I also wanted to mention a public talk that UW-Madison philosophy professor Stephen Adler is going to be taking a look at the connections between science and Judaism.
One of the programs of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy is called Science, Religion, and Ethics. In this program, we explore the connections between science and religion. We've had a number of presenters deal with these two topics. I think these two topics are very important because the two strongest forces in society today are science and religion. And some people think that they are at odds with each other. In this program, we explore the connections between them. And our colleague Steve Nadler from the philosophy department is speaking tonight at 7:30 in the chemistry building on the connections between science and Judaism. It's a public talk, and we invite everyone in the listening audience, especially in the area, to come.
7:30 tonight in the Daniels Chemistry Mall, building, I'm sorry, the Daniels Chemistry Building today. Sharon and Shatek had a point to make, I believe. Sharon, hello.
Good morning. Professor, I spent 25 years on our university campus. Had a lot of foreign students. Took me about 20 years to figure this out. The foreign students tend to have been taught in British schools, and they speak absolutely perfect English about three times as fast as we do. And that's wherein lies the problem.
What do you think, Basav?
Yes, that's one of the issues I mentioned before about ability to project and to speak clearly and to and to pace the interaction. Did you hear the way I said it? And to pace the interaction. And this is one of the things we talk about in the weekly staff meeting with all graduate teaching assistants, not only the ones that are from overseas. It's very important to be able to communicate with the students. And communication is a two-way street. The students themselves should also have good communication skills. But you're right, Sharon, that slowing down the pace is important.
And thank you very much. And with that, we need to conclude. And Basam, I also always in conclusion want to mention your website, because a lot of the information we talked about today is up there, and a whole lot more on there as well. So if you want to take a look, we mentioned experiments that you might be able to do, interesting facts about chemistry and science. Take a look at the website, which is www.scifun, that's S-C-I-F-U-N, scifun.org.
And we'll put a summary of today's program there, too.
All right. Thanks, Basam. Appreciate it very much. Science, research, and inquiring minds. Basam Shakashiri, we'll have him back, and we will do this again with him and talk some more. Maybe next time we'll talk that education a little bit more, or maybe we'll zero in more on research. We didn't get to research very much at all today. But coming up, we've got a visit from acclaimed author Jerry Apps, who's got a great new book out. Visiting with him here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.